Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Thank you for listening into my conversation with Ingrid Cole. Ingrid is one of the directors of Everyday Independence. Please accept my audio apologies in advance. We both had unstable internet situations, and that has led to a little bit of buffering and a couple of little misses in the conversation. It is an epic conversation. Ingrid was her usual incredible, generous self, and we cover many big, bright blue sky topics. And we would both really love you to listen to the conversation and to tolerate the audio that you will be listening to. Thank you. Good morning, Ingrid Cole. Ingrid is one of three directors of a company called Everyday Independence. And Ingrid's got a physio background, but in recent years is very heavily into the management piece. But I'll get Ingrid to introduce and tell us a little bit more about Everyday Independence.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. So Everyday Independence is an organisation, and we support people with a disability to live an everyday life, and we do that by delivering OT, physio and speech pathology. And really what we do is we support people to really build on their strengths, but also to make changes in areas that are not working.
Absolutely. Very nice, very nice. And just before we hit record, all the good stuff happens before we hit record. I need to rework that a bit. You said as a physio you were working back on the tools, and that had been really interesting. What fell out of that kind of experience?
Yes, so I have been a physio for most of my career, but certainly over the last couple of years I've really done very little of that, maybe seeing one or two participants a year. But recently a couple of colleagues went on annual leave. And we also have some more junior members of staff that are OTs and speechies. So I said that I would go in as the treating physio. So it was really to mentor in that role, but also to be the physio. And what was really great was getting back into the daily grind and really understanding what people do. But the opportunities for me that were really apparent is how physios can support people with perhaps non-physical disabilities to really have a much more active active life. So I think there's great scope for physio to really be part of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And if we take that lifetime view, we're really able to support people to have a very preventative approach to living with a disability.
And working towards health and wellness, not just kind of remediating and problem solving, but to actually front footing it and thinking about what they need to sustain and enjoy their abilities and the access and opportunities that community has for them.
Yeah, absolutely, Kathy. So even if you look at my own personal career trajectory, I started off working in hospitals, so very much in that health sector, and then moved into the rehab sector, so supporting people perhaps after they had sustained a significant injury. But then working in the disability sector, it really is going right to that right-hand side of the ICF and looking at participation and inclusion. So how can we support people to participate in everyday life? So for me as a physio, whilst the body structures and function is really important, I'm always looking now at goal setting in the participation and inclusion space. And that for me has been so rewarding as a physio, because I think that it's not just now for me about getting people home or making sure people can walk well. What can I do with that walking? You know, what does that make possible for them, and how do they actually live a life that is meaningful for them?
Deep in your heart, would you really like to be an OT?
I certainly have people that say to me that I am more of an OT, that I am a physio. I think that's probably I've been influenced by many OTs that I've worked with. I certainly have always enjoyed working as part of a team. I think I sometimes probably do work outside of scope. But, yes, I think that I just think that, you know, to be able to support somebody to be out and about and included and for their disability to not define them, yes, that is what really drives me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So Everyday Independence is a mighty fine organisation, and every time we catch up, there seems to be more and more awesome happening. If I walk through the front door, well, I can't even walk through the front door because you've got so many front doors. How about give us an overview of where you are geographically and the sort of nature of services you've got on the ground?
Yes, certainly. So Everyday Independence is an organisation, as I said, that supports people to live an everyday life. So we actually support them to live that in their natural environment. So that may be home, that may be school, that may be work or somewhere in their community. So whilst we do have Everyday Independence doorways, our offices are very much almost a behind the scenes scenario where our staff will come, they'll come to be together, they'll come to learn, they'll come to work out what it is that we do, but in terms of actually the service delivery, it is out there in people's natural environments. So we cover all of Victoria. We have Bendigo and Geelong offices regionally, and we just opened an office in Colac this week because there's certainly a need in the community down there. And then we have four sites in Melbourne: Blackburn, Epping, Cheltenham and Derrimut. And then we have some smaller satellite sites so staff can work in and out as they're on the road. And then also New South Wales. So we have the Hunter region and Sydney. And the Hunter region and Geelong have been particularly important sites for us over the last 3 to 4 years because that's really supported us to learn what is the NDIS and how do we actually deliver a service to participants and families of the NDIS.
Amazing, amazing. And so every conversation there seems to be a new site. It's just great, 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 great. You work with people right across the age group and people of all sorts of ages and stages. What do your clients kind of look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the things that we really wanted to offer as an organisation is we wanted to be able to offer people a lifetime view and a lifetime experience. Now, that certainly doesn't mean that they need to be with us for their whole life, but we would like them to be able to dip in and out of services as they require them, so especially life stage transitions. So as an organisation, we see children right through from early intervention right through to seniors. We certainly have a workforce that often specialises in a particular area of that life because the skills that you need to support somebody in childhood are often very different to the skills that you will need in adulthood, or it might be for a variety of reasons. So we have wheelchair and seating experts, we have driving experts, and we have different consultants for different things that people need. But we hope that if they come to Everyday Independence, what they will see is that we take a lifetime view of their disability, and what they will see is that we take what we call a person-centred approach, so really putting a person at the centre and working with their supports, their families or anybody else in their community to help support them, because one of our philosophies is, and it is backed by the evidence, is that therapy occurs between therapy sessions, not during the therapy session. So really setting them up for therapy to be a part of their everyday life. We talk about embedding it in routines. And I think if therapy is successful, it's almost invisible to people. Because they actually are practicing these skills as part of their everyday life. I might have gone a bit off topic there, Kathy.
Love it. I'm just in such a happy place. The person-centred practice approach, I know that you and your leadership team have done a huge amount of work, and that's not just recent work. That's probably 2015, 2016 work, and I get the hunch that you're reaping the benefits of that. For those that aren't as familiar with what PCP, person-centred practice, is, how does your organisation embrace it and deliver on that commitment?
Absolutely. So we, person-centered practice is definitely one of those terms that I think that if you ask any therapist or organisation, are you practicing in a person-centered or a family-centered or a customer-centered or a consumer-centric way, everybody would say yes. But when you really then start to ask some detailed questions, it's incredible how service-centered our organisations still are. Because, again, we're all trying to attract a workforce that's appealing for a workforce to work with us. But if we're truly person-centred, we need to meet the person where they're at and really understand. And that's been a very big shift for clinicians to sort of move out of that expert role and to treat the person as the expert of their life and their disability. So how do we achieve that across the organisation? We had a real... It's not just a way you practice, it's a culture. So everybody that enters our organisation has what we call a one-page profile, and we use the same tools with our employees to sort of understand how they're going to be successful in their role, and then that filters through to the way how they will work with participants to how they're going to be successful to achieve their goals. So what we've tried to do, and I think we've done it quite successfully, is we work with our teams and our staff in the same way that we work with participants. We build capacity, we work on strengths, we have a no-blame culture, we take a positive approach to risk. We do all those sorts of things that are meaningful to people, and we do that internally as an organisation, but we also do it with the people that we work with, and it's constantly evolving, but it's not a evidence-based practice thing or a way in which you work.
On the back of that person-centered approach to both your team and yourselves and your clients, you guys have really thrown yourself at a coaching culture and have developed that as well.
Yeah.
How's that changed? How's that part of your recruiting and the performance development and the service delivery? Because it's really, my understanding is it's really flavouring every aspect of what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've been an enormous influence for us with that, Kathy. So if we go back in time, Everyday Independence used to offer really a rehab service for people that had sustained an injury or for people that were living with disability. So, you know, that old medical rehab model of the therapist coming in and being the expert. And with the progression of our industry, and I think a huge instigator of that is the NDIS, we've moved very much towards a capacity building and consultative approach to the way in which we deliver services. So person-centred practice was the first part of that, but then how do you deliver and how do you create that culture? And coaching is one way of delivering that culture. So that ability to listen, that ability to, or I suppose that philosophy that you really genuinely believe that the person themselves have the answers, they just need some support and direction to get there, and also the being present and being able to walk alongside somebody rather than push them or lead them was really important to us. And it's all backed by the evidence. I mean, there's some really fabulous literature out there that supports this approach. So you're absolutely right. 2015-16 was all about person-centred practice for us, and 2017 has been about coaching. So we had to really go back to the drawing board, and we started very much internally and externally at the same time with coaching. But the way in which we support our therapists now is with a coach approach and a coaching culture. So rather than calling up your professional supervisor and saying, I don't know how to do this, and they would tell you how to do it, we very much use a coach approach, or we're very deliberate, we use a mentoring approach when somebody actually does need to receive some learning and teaching. So we don't have professional supervision anymore. We have development coaching, and we have mentoring for people when they need to learn a specific skill.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. High five. The whole title of clinical supervision is so spooky and so kind of, I don't know, it's not even medical model. When I've supervised people, I'm doing air quotes, I've learnt so much. So it's so not a one-way thing. So I'm really, yeah, really heartened to hear that you guys have changed up the wording and the thinking behind it and trailblazing that piece for others.
It's certainly not been without its challenges because as an organisation we have introduced a new graduate program and but not even just with the new graduates. People will often sometimes say, Ingrid, I don't want to be coached, I just want to be taught. And there's definitely a need for that. If you're going to an appointment in 15 minutes and you need to know how to use a bot too, you can't coach somebody to that. So what's been really great about collaborating with you, Kathy, is supporting our therapists to use that dial. So dialing up your coach approach or dialing it down. And that's been really important, in particular when we work with families, because we have to determine a family's state of readiness. And if a family's not ready to be coached, coaching isn't going to be successful. So having a coaching culture isn't just about all we do is coach. It's about where can we use it to get the best possible outcome. Yeah. So I think it's very much a work in progress.
Oh, I was just about to say work in progress. So I heard some really magical words back in the last minute or so, graduate program. Are you comfy to share a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. So sector-wide, the disability sector is going to need 90,000 new people to enter the workforce to deliver the National Disability Insurance Scheme. So, you know, 450,000 Australians are going to need support. So they're not all going to be allied health professionals, but it's estimated that maybe 10% of those 90,000 will be allied health professionals. And if we take a lifetime view, allied health professionals are very well poised to actually decrease the cost of somebody with a disability over their lifetime. So we're saying that if you get the right supports in early, that you're actually going to be able to really help the scheme come to its what it was designed to do, and that is to have people civically participating in society, working, and the scheme should, all going well, within a decade or two be paying for itself. So there's a really important role for allied health professionals to be involved, especially early on in the scheme. So there's two reasons why new graduates can be really helpful. One, they're often available and they're looking for work. Because we do, unfortunately, in allied health, we have a very high female proportion where we go off and we have families or we leave the sector or we only want to work part-time. So new graduates are often available and available to work 4 days, 5 days a week, which gives participants lots of choice and control. They also are really plastic and willing to learn, so can come into our organisation and learn the way in which we do things. They come with a high degree of competency with IT, which is a really important enabler for us when we're working out and about in the community. So new graduates have all these wonderful skills, and we feel as an organisation we have wonderful clinical skills. So if we can teach them those skills, I think we've got people that are going to be able to achieve really high impact outcomes for people with a disability. So in our organisation it's getting the balance right. So we will often bring often we like to bring two or three new graduates in to the organisation at the same time because they do a really great job of supporting each other. And we have that shared responsibility for learning. So with our development coaching, our mentoring, and we're developing a actual new graduate program, we're hoping that we're actually going to be able to also contribute to having a workforce that is going to be able to deliver what the NDIS needs us to deliver. Because one of the biggest risks for the NDIS is that there isn't going to be a workforce there to deliver it, and we certainly can't rely on our current workforce.
Sounds amazing. I read, of course this would be the moment to actually be able to quote and reach and find it, that I think it was something like It was either 3 or 4, I think it might have been 5% of Australia's future workforce will be engaged in and around the provision of services to people with different and disabilities on the back of that NDIS investment. So, capturing those graduates and developing them is going to be amazing. But I suspect to be able to harness and engage that senior and sort of more advanced career professionals, that's going to be a different challenge altogether, because there's a little bit of a trend where you get enough experience, you go out on your own, you do your own small business. And that's where a lot of clinical excellence is disappearing too, kind of utilised. What are your thoughts on engaging and retaining that experienced clinician?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's probably the step before that is when you have new graduates as well, you're very much open to criticism about, peddling a business that's just all about the dollar and not about the experience. So the balance is critically important. Can you have young people and succession planning coming into your organisation? You absolutely need those, what we call early career clinicians. We have new graduates, early career clinicians, and then we have those mid-career clinicians that are consolidated practice professionals, and then we have our advanced practice clinicians as well. And it's also about supporting and growing those clinicians to really excel in an area that they want to excel in. So one of the advantages about being in an organisation and not being out on your own is being able to do the things that you really like to do. How often do we hear of the clinician that's out on their own and they love doing the clinical stuff, and that, then they've got to go and do their BAS statement, or they've got to go and do their NDIS applications of registrations and all those sorts of things. So if we can create a work environment for people where they can come and excel and do the job that they love, and I'm a really firm believer too in swarm intelligence. So if we can have that organisation where we have great minds coming together, and then there's something really rewarding about supporting. Everybody always puts their hand up to support the younger clinicians in the organisation. Therapists often really like that. We do a lot of work on getting that balance right. And I think that the other group that are exceptional is what I call the mid-career clinician. They're really open, that they've got some of the best ideas of anybody in the organisation. They're really young and they're innovative, they're using IT, and we need to get better at creating pathways for people that have an idea. I've got an idea, and where do I go to? Where do I go to with this? And it's really exciting because we're getting the scale now. Sorry, we're getting the scale now where we can support people to do those non-billable, non-clinical activities.
Yeah. It's capturing the clinical passion and experience with the business know-how, because they know how your business ticks, and getting them in for some business development tasks as well and some project work and things that is just, a little bit different but very complementary to their clinical excellence. And, so many businesses I hear, the therapist is just flat out, it's all about billable hours and KPIs, and whilst I can understand why that is needed, that creativity can be highly compromised in those sort of environments.
Absolutely, but that's where the scale is important, Kathy. You had to get in the first 2 to 3 years, roll your sleeves up so you could meet payroll requirements and registration requirements. We've been really low touch on marketing. Our marketing has just been about doing a good job. So we've now, going to be able to look now at really, some of those co-design principles where we can go out and speak with consumers and understand what they really need. And we've always wanted to do all of that, but until you actually get some scale, and the NDIS brings us scale, that's where I think we're going to see some really amazing innovation. And I think that organisations also hold so much data that universities and researchers and everything will be really interested in. So if we can work collaboratively and in partnership with other organisations, I think we're going to be able to really do some pretty great things that are going to progress the sector forward. Yeah,
get some change. Your business knowledge has had a really steep and steady and spectacular trajectory. So when we first met in 2012-ish, I don't know when it was, maybe 13. It was, you were perhaps more in physio mode. But think about what you're doing now. How have you learnt all that? Where have you read? Who have you spoken to? How's all that happened in such an impressive and awesome way?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you and I first met, I was an employee of the organisation. So I'm now a director and an owner. So that in itself gives a whole nother level of opportunity to be able to take some risks and try some things. You know, I suppose there's not the red tape that we used to have to jump through earlier on in the organisation. So we've really been able to strip that back. So that's been really important. I'm always speaking to people. You know me. I love a good talk. I have got some amazing mentors. And I would speak with my mentors who, you know, Leanne and now Healy, and they're my business partners, would speak with them on a daily basis. So that's been really important to me. But it's been, I think, that positive approach to risk. Just getting out there, having a go, looking at what works, looking at what doesn't work. Certainly an area of development for me is to perhaps be more structured in how I do that, so I'm more efficient with my time. That's certainly something that we need to look at, I need to look at now. But no, Kathy, I think it's an area of still enormous development for me, but it's just finding that the right supports at the right time to really try and edge forward.
Yeah, big fan of just-in-time support. And different people come into your lives for different reasons, and sometimes you acknowledge and capitalise on that, and other times you miss it and perhaps they'll re-enter in different ways. But I've had really powerful mentors in my business as well, and oh my gosh, just to have that ear there is amazing, and to be directed towards a piece of content or something else just in time when you need it, it's quite magical really with how it all happens. It's sometimes it's kind of good to be open and available and somewhat unplanned around that learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we see it all the time. I mean, there's been a lot of media and commentary around a growth mindset. But one of the things I'm really proud of myself about, but our organisation, is that we do have that growth mindset and that no blame culture. And it's about getting out there and having a go and establishing what worked and what didn't work. That's very different to perhaps other organisations that I've worked in my career, where there was that real personal brand about what you were doing and, you know, did you get it right or did you get it wrong? That's been really important. And I think that's a confidence thing. I think to be able to say, I don't mind if I mess up. I've had a go. I'm not sure I would have had that 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. I wanted to do a good job for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'd love to ask you what you think about the NDIS now and what you think it's going to look like in about 5 years' time.
Yeah, sure. I'm really lucky because I've been involved in August, so just next month I've been involved working in the NDIS for 4 years. So I started in the Hunter and then 18 months ago moved to Geelong. NDIS has always been a passion of mine. From my second year as a physio student, I worked at the Royal Talbot and Spinal Cord Unit, and I worked with two C4 quadriplegics. One was injured in a car and one was injured surfing. And the whole treatment and discharge planning and life that these two people were going to have was so incredibly different, because the person that was injured in the car had all the supports that they required and they even returned to work. And the other participant that was injured surfing actually went to live in a nursing home in amongst an elderly group of residents. So for me, as what, a 22, 23 year old, I really struggled with the social justice of that situation, I suppose. So, and I heard about the NDIS in sort of 2012. I knew that that was what I was going to be involved in. The NDIS in its early days was absolutely incredible in the Hunter. It was all about dreaming. It was all about living big, and everybody got pretty much everything they asked for. Choice and control was up in neon lights, and you asked and you got. We knew that that wasn't going to be sustainable, and reasonable and necessary had to very quickly come into play. And so some of the therapists in those regions that worked, I think, in those early days, that's been a really difficult transition because you've sort of given something and then taken it away. But at the other sites, the NDIS for people on a day-to-day basis, it can be frustrating. But what we're actually seeing on the ground with participants, it is absolutely incredible. I would encourage anybody to drive through the streets of Geelong and to see people that are out and about, to see people with a disability that are working. I mean, for example, we had a participant that was at home all day, every day, playing computer games. And I asked his mother, he was in his 40s with an intellectual disability. I asked his mother, what's your goal? And she said, my goal is that he is okay when I die. And we frequently hear that from families. And that was when I first moved to Geelong, which was early 2016. And I went to the supermarket on the 24th of December to do my supermarket shop. And you can all imagine how chaotic the supermarket is on the 24th of December at 5 p.m. in the afternoon. No, sorry, it was 23rd of December. It was the day before Christmas Eve. And this man who didn't recognise me said, can I help you to your car with your groceries? And I accepted. And I looked up and I recognised him. And then somebody else yelled out, let's call him James. Hey, James, make sure you get the such and such. And he spat back some joke. And then I said, oh, what are you doing for Christmas? And he was going to the managers of the Woolworths house for Christmas because he had some new friends. And he had this whole new, not just a job, he had a community. It was just incredible. And I tell you that story because I've got so many of them, Kathy. I've got others, young men that's parents haven't had to resign from their jobs to look after them, and they're working in cleaning out cages. So I genuinely believe, and I don't mean this in a patronising way, but I don't think families even know yet because they haven't been able to dream for the person that has it, that it is going to be such a better place. I think the NDIS would be great for people that are now have a disability, but I think it's going to be realised in another, actually not just 5 years, 10, 20 years, where children that are currently at school, you can now ask them a question, what do you want to do when you grow up, knowing that it's realistic, where you couldn't ask that 5 or 10 years ago.
Definitely here for the long term. I think in 5 to 10 years it will be coming consistent and evening out across the country.
Yeah. So the day-to-day grind is tricky. It's really hard to get answers. The NDIA are very clear that they don't really operate with providers. So we don't have a point of contact. And one of the things that we're finding the most difficult is that we want to be innovative. We want to co-design. We want to help develop this scheme. But there's actually nowhere to go to with our ideas. But again, that's the marketplace, and maybe we just need to try those ideas and see if people take them up or don't. And look, people are getting very, very different answers, very different days. And perhaps the saddest thing is if you don't have really strong advocacy, you're probably not faring so well under the scheme at the moment. But they say we're building the plane as we fly it. I don't think there would be any other way to do such an enormous reform. I even think they could have spent 10 years preparing for it and it would still be chaotic. Medicare was the same. And, look, I think Medicare is a pretty great system now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing those two powerful stories. I hope those that are listening hold them in their minds and hearts because the NDIS isn't about us as providers, and the day-to-day struggle and the frustrations and the tech and the all the rest of it, the Q&A, is such a daily frustration that it very, very quickly becomes about us as providers, because our Dave's and our business life cycles are so impacted by it. But it isn't about us. It's actually about people who need the support to live their best and extraordinary life. And hopefully those two stories will be a really good reminder. So thank you. Thank you for that. At the start of the story, I was having a little giggle about that you were, in fact, shopping on the 24th of December. But
yes.
Again, the story wasn't about you. The story was about that that guy that you re-encountered.
Yes, and I think we definitely need to share more of these stories. When people join our organisation, it's a pretty tough gig for that first 3 to 6 months as they learn to work in what we call that billable environment. You know, it's very much now that shift that best practice is everything about best practice, but it is also about delivering a really great outcome within the funding envelope that's provided, and that's a really big shift for staff. So, but once they actually learn the system, and we've worked really hard to have really great infrastructure in our organisation as well, but once that's all going, there's no job that's more rewarding. It's really quite incredible getting out there. And, you know, we've had families that were at breaking point, and one family a couple of weeks ago booked a P&O cruise for the whole family to go on, you know, living on a boat in a small room for 7 days. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, this was the family when we first entered their home. Dad was going to, you know, had sort of left but was on the brink of leaving. So, yeah, there's some really great outcomes.
Yeah. Watch this space. And I guess we're all just hanging on for the ride, participants and providers. So it'll be a decade of ongoing highs and lows. But. Yeah. Yeah,
here for the going to put my feet up after a decade, I think.
Yeah. Here for the long game. What is unique about what Everyday Independence does at the moment?
Well, that's a really good question. I think we offer OT, physio and speech pathology. So that's that multidisciplinary, and we've got a team therapy approach. So working with the person, really trying to embrace and build their informal supports, and working in a routines-based way so we can really embed those therapy opportunities in people's everyday life. And so by using that multidisciplinary team approach, we're not just going to work on a speech goal. We're going to work on a participation goal that might involve speech and language, it might involve memory and planning, it might involve the ability to be able to walk and move or access, so using very much a multidisciplinary approach. I think our person-centred approach is not necessarily unique, but I think critically important to the fact that we can actually deliver high-impact outcomes. And the other really exciting thing about our organisation that I don't know if other organisations can do is that we are collecting data to demonstrate that we do get high impact outcomes for people. So we have an impact team in our organisation that collects that data, and we want to be able to go to the NDIS or other organisations and say, you know, for 95% of the people that you referred to us last year, we got this outcome. And we use a number of outcome measures to do that. That lifetime view, and the other thing that's been really successful is we've had a number of participants that have moved state or moved town, and they've been able to move over the weekend and seamlessly continue their therapy the next week. So everything is obviously kept centrally on a database. So, you know, have therapy on a Wednesday, move house and move to Bendigo, and have my therapist come and see my new environment on the Tuesday to make sure that I can access and move around. So
that's remarkable.
A lot of work to be able to support people to live. So that's the philosophy, to support people to live an everyday life and know that there's a lot of different facets to what that is. And we look at all of that, not just the ability to speak or the ability to move or the ability to access a building or the ability to do some personal care. Like, what does all of that, if we put that all together, what does that make possible for you? What does that make possible for you, your life, and your family? That's what we're trying to achieve. I will say, we've obviously, there's always a real, what's the word, temptation to offer other things to our service offering. So coordination of support, has we've often been asked to do that, or, you know, dietetics or EP or all these different things. But for the moment, as an organisation, we have decided that we want to be the best in the world at therapy, and we think we can be the best in the world at OT, physio and speech. I think Australia are world leaders, and I think that we can do that. If we go and add a lot of different things, then that's going to water down our ability to achieve that mission of being the best in the world.
Yeah, dilute your focus.
And that may sound arrogant, but that's our goal, that we're aiming high.
That would be high. That would be high. I have no doubt that you are going to come incredibly close if in fact you don't surpass it in half the time that you've allocated.
Well, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. What have the last 3 or 4 years as a co-director taught you?
It has taught me that we absolutely do not need to do this on our own. Listening, co-design, understanding what people need, using that coach approach, really taking that time to just facilitate and try and lead alongside has been really important, because you learn very early on that it's going to have to be, and I mentioned swarm intelligence before, we're really trying to empower and move an entire organisation forward into the sector. So not to do that by ourselves, and I mean that by ourselves as an organisation as well, so the need to partner and collaborate. And I think very early on in the NDIS, it was all about competition, competition, competition. But I think you can still have competition with really strong collaboration. So that's probably been the main thing, to really try and move things forward and up.
Very nice. If we're sitting here talking this time next year, what place will Everyday Independence be in sort of 12 months' time? Without giving away any trade secrets. Or can if you want.
No, that's not a problem at all. Look, I think in another 12 months' time, we'll be well and truly into that rollout of the NDIS, and that's really been our focus and our mission for the last 2 to 3 years. So we'll see bigger scale, bigger teams, hopefully even more innovation around how we support all members of our team and empower our workforce. I think we'll see a much larger New South Wales operation. There's very high demand in New South Wales for our services. So there's a strong focus on New South Wales, because at the moment that accounts for probably about 15 to 20% of our business, and I would like to see that be 50-50 of our business. But I also hope that we'll actually see the delivery of OT, physio and speech as our core, but I'd like to see some more sort of innovative service options for people. And I'd really like to see that we can be a little bit more responsive to what the sector needs.
So it sounds as though you'll be working 7 days a week for the rest of the year. The next year.
So I think, as we said, it's about getting the right people, isn't it? Right people on the bus, and our staff are just incredible. They our staff are our best. We don't actually have a business development manager. Our staff are our business developers,
as they should be.
Yeah, we just our staff just love what they do. They you know, they'll come into my office and they'll want to tell me this really great story, and I'll be like in my mind sometimes, oh, not now. But then you sit and you listen, and there's a passion, and I suppose it really is a privilege to lead and grow a team that can go out there and get those outcomes for people. And we had a really beautiful celebration in our office last week because a couple of our staff finished their new graduate year. So we had balloons and flowers, and everybody in the team spoke and reflected on how they'd seen this person grow and develop, and just taking that time to recognise that rather than rushing to the next thing was really important for our team. And gosh, I had a spring in my step for a good couple of days.
Well done. Well done. I guess you could add to your 12-month plan that you will be an employer of choice, and you will be a destination that clinicians wait and watch and cross their fingers that they can join you. And I wish for that for you as well, with the amount of work that you put into your organisational culture and your processes and your performance development stuff. That would be a nice piece to have as well.
Absolutely, Kathy. And that's certainly a goal, to be an employer of choice. And even in the last year, recruiting is so much easier than perhaps it was 12 months ago. 24 months ago. But I'd also like to see, you know, I want to hear from people about, we don't have to stick with the same model of, you know, three owners and that sort of hierarchical model. You know, there's lots of really great commentary and literature out there now about organisations doing things in really progressive ways. I mean, Richard Branson's one that springs to mind, but there's some other really great organisations out there, and I want to take some more time to learn and understand those, because I think that giving people, for me, as I mentioned, actually having some accountability and some ownership over what I do has been incredibly motivating, because, you know, you just really want to do a good job for yourself and your partners and the people that you serve.
Oh, look, I think on that note, we'll just have to say thank you. Thank you. I'm sitting here waving my arms around, which probably isn't helping sound quality. Thank you so much. If I think back, it's probably taken us about 5 months to organise this recording. I think it started at start of the year with one thing and another. So thank you so much for your time, Ingrid. I look forward to many more conversations with your good self and watching that meteoric rise that you are planning for and that I know you will get. So well done. Regards to Mal and Leanne as well from me, and thank you so much for your time.
Well, no, Kathy, and thank you to you. I mean, I think that the support that you've given us, especially with the developing of the coaching culture. I think when we originally spoke, I said, I'm not interested in this, you know, course that people would come along to and get all motivated about and then come back to work on the Monday and put the workbook in their pigeonhole and think I'm going to get to that one day. And you have enabled us to embed it as a culture, as opposed to just some fabulous course that Kathy Love ran for us. So that's been really, really successful. And That's part of our DNA now, so that's been really important, so thank you.
My pleasure. Oh, wasn't expecting that bit. All right, go and throw yourself at the afternoon. Thank you once again, and congratulations. Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.